Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to 1% Better, the podcast where we take a look at hidden stories in sports. I'm your host, Zylan Fanake. Joining me is my co-host, David Lipman.
Mate, I'm excited. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Before we dive into who we are, I just want to talk a little bit about what this podcast is about and going to be about. So we often see the top layer of performance in sport, but it's the lesser known stories and science and the things that's happening sort of in the background that isn't often exposed, but is often the reason for the success. And we want to do a deep dive into those fascinating stories. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think we're looking at that layer deeper than is the surface level. Do a bit of research, talk a bit about it, talk to people who are a bit behind things, tell stories that are otherwise not told, talk about some of the science behind things. Really, I guess, if you think about it from a computer perspective, like double click on a few things. And I think people will like it. We're going to try and be relatively topical with what's going on in the meeting at the time. And yeah, happy to have people submit stories they want us to talk about, submit things that they think are interesting, and we'll talk about how to do that in the coming while. But this is just a bit of a hello and who we are, and yeah.
We've hosted previous podcasts before, and some people listening might know us already. But for everyone who is new here, welcome. Firstly, we love having you here, and you are beautiful. You look beautiful, I can guarantee you that. And a little bit about who we are. I'm Zylan Fanake. I've previously worked in television, in sports, journalism, for a big broadcaster, sports broadcaster in South Africa. Since then, I've transitioned to working in professional cycling in Europe at the highest level, in various marketing, storytelling, content creation roles, working with brands, connecting them to athletes, telling them the stories through the various exciting things that those athletes live through, the highs and the lows, and bringing that to you, the audience. In addition to professional cycling, I absolutely love most sports, endurance sports, ball sports. I will not, and maybe people will unsubscribe. Some people might unsubscribe after I say this. I will not miss a Manchester United game ever. Very bad for our podcast subscriber numbers, that one, at the moment.
And your sleep, mate. And your sleep.
And my sleep, exactly. But absolutely in love with sports and absolutely in love with bringing you behind-the-scenes content in sport. And that's what we'll be looking to do here. David, a little bit about you, mate.
Yeah, so that's a long story. But lived in four countries across my life. I was originally from where you're from, mate, from South Africa. Spent some time in Australia, the Netherlands, and now in London. You know, along the journey, I was an exercise physiologist. And part of that, I was coaching at sub-elite levels and working with some elite athletes as well. I worked as a strength and conditioning coach. I coached team sports as well, coached some Olympic weightlifting, then went into, you know, I was also a podiatrist for a while and then ended up being a medical doctor. And so I've done some event medical cover, all those sort of things. So I kind of did all that and then transitioned as I moved to the Netherlands out of that. Back into coaching, actually, and coached at, you know, fairly high levels there. And then, then transitioned into tech and was working in a tech startup where I met you, mate. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell. So like you, absolutely love sport. I'll watch almost any sport. And just fascinated by how I got drawn into certain sports as a result of meeting personalities and learning a bit about the sport, right? And that's kind of how everybody gets in. And once you start to understand some of the science behind things or some of the stories or some of the people involved and some of what's happened, you all of a sudden are engaged. And I think that's what we're trying to do here, is bring that layer deeper so that people start to understand and enjoy and all of those things. And that really does bring us to the first thing we sort of wanted to touch on, to give people a taste of what this podcast might be like. And Drive to Survive is probably the first one. There's Tour de France Unchained and all these other ones. And, you know, this year, there's some really interesting stuff happening in track and field, all trying to leverage off the Olympics, I think. I think everybody understands that track and field is one of the most popular parts of the Olympic Games. I'd say it's probably that and swimming, and then there's a few other things. But I'd say those are the things that people, when they think of the Olympic Games, they think of track and field and swimming for the most part. And you know, that's changing, of course. But this year, Olympic Games, track and field, and some other huge stories. Of course, there's the Drive to Survive, like Netflix series that's being brought out this year, 2024. for track and field, which will follow the sprinters. And I'm told that they're planning seasons 2, 3, etc. And I'm sure season 2 will cover the, you know, the middle distance guys, particularly the 1500 with people like Josh Kerr and Jakob Ingebrigtsen. We can talk a bit about that if you want, mate. But there's also some other interesting stuff happening. This interested you, and I brought this up to you, mate, is that, you know, the Seb Coe, head of World Athletics, has announced that there's going to be World Championships as a culmination to the season every year, basically. Now, it's not actually going to be every year, and we'll talk about that. But what do you think, mate? When I brought this up, you sort of, your eyes lit up.
Yeah, it makes sense to me because I actually watched the last World Championships and I wouldn't really watch track and field any other time. I wouldn't plan my day around it, but if I happen to be in front of the TV and it's on, I'd watch it. But the World Championships actually created a discussion point around my running group. Did you watch it last night? Did you see this happen, etc.? So there's definitely an interest around it. And I think they used to have the championships every second year, or not every year, which didn't make any sense to me because for sure that is the highlight of every high level athlete's season, and that is what they would build up to. And World Athletics seems to have come to that conclusion now, to not just have it every year and that be the crescendo of the season, but like you say, to bring behind the scenes content where you have a storytelling strategy where you bring in the athletes as characters and you build them up and you see what they go through, and we as fans want to see whether they're success or failure at the end of the day. That's absolutely what we live for. You mentioned Jakob Ingebrigtsen, and I love watching him. I mean, this dude rocks up tall, skinny, with tattoos and earring, and you can just tell he doesn't care. He's just going to beat whoever's there. And I love when he doesn't win because I love to see how he's going to react as well. That's all part of it. And bringing that closer, yeah, it was intriguing to me and it makes absolute sense.
Yeah. I mean, so just for context for listeners, previously the World Championships happened every, it happened on, let's call it the second year. And the Olympics had happened on the fourth year. So you had this first and third year with no championships. And there's an argument from a science perspective this makes sense, in that you can build in that year. You can maybe take it a little bit easier after the Olympics, use that as a stepping stone season towards the next season of the World Championships. And then, you know, and then only having a World Championships every 4 years and only having a major championship, so World or Olympic Games, every 2 years makes some sense. It brings prestige. It brings a level of really high level. But then the question is, what is a season for an athlete, for a track and field athlete?
So actually that is something I'd like to put to you as someone who understands science, as someone who understands coaching. Is an Olympic year, build up to the Olympics in that year, is that different to a normal season for a track and field athlete?
So generally what they'll do is they'll actually have what they call a quadrennial cycle. So most people would be familiar in periodization. We talk about microcycles, so the shortest repeating cycle, often a week, a mesocycle, often like a month or something like that. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's 2 months or whatever, but it's a sort of middle level. And then a macro cycle, which is usually a year, often a full season, is how we think about it in periodization. But there's actually another level that people talk about, which is a quadrennial cycle, which, as the name suggests from Latin, is every 4 years. And that's an Olympic cycle. So they, when you're working at these sporting bodies, they do plan 1, 2, 3 cycles in advance. So I saw somebody post overnight, like, what's the genesis of the French renaissance in marathon running? Because they've had a bunch of guys run really fast in marathons this year and they haven't previously. And the question is like, why? And I was like, well, they knew Paris was coming for 10 years. So 10 years ago, you go find a bunch of kids who are very good in and have the right physiological capacities, and you sponsor them and you know, fund them and develop them so that they do come out. So then, and you need to do, that's not 5 kids. That's like 10, 15 kids, so that you can get 3 guys for the Olympic Games at the home Olympic Games. And of course they're motivated by that. They are keen to perform in Paris. And then they go from there. So to answer the question, as a track and field coach, you always have one eye on major championships and you always have an eye on the season. So you're looking at developing within a year, well, within a week, within a month, within a year, and then within 4 years. And so sometimes that means not competing. So for instance, Cam Myers is a very good Australian middle distance runner. He's like 17 years old. He's just run, I think, 3:33, like beat Jake Whiteman, who won the 1500 meter world championships last year. So this kid is a big deal. Just qualified for the Olympics, but he didn't go to the World Championships last year. Now, why wouldn't you go? Because that's experience. Of course, it's a great experience. And you may not ever qualify again. Well, it's a long-term viewpoint. Hey, actually, he's better off resting. He's had a long season. This is a lot of stimulus for him. Let's take him back, rest, do the work he needs to in the off season so that he can come back better next season. And lo and behold, he's running out of his skin now in an Olympic year, which makes tons of sense, right? So say all that to say, yes, you've always got one eye on development long term and thinking long term as well as that short term viewpoint. So what I think this does, though, is it takes track and field out of being European centric to some degree. So the moment track and field outside of Europe is really difficult. In Europe, it's huge. It's a huge sell. You've got the Diamond League, which goes all over Europe and obviously to the UAE as well. But I think trying to globalize that a little bit, remove some of that dominance of the Diamond League, because part of the problem with the Diamond League is it's to some degree made for TV. So they're killing some events, right? They no longer have a 5,000 or a 10,000 meters. They are very limited in some of the things. If you're a sprinter, there's only eight, there's no heats. It's just a final. So like, it's actually a very gated community in many ways, or it's a gated field, and it can be hard to get entries. So then you're on the second tier of the circuit, which is fine as well. There's no problems there, but you know, it's
how does someone break through?
Yeah, you have to perform, and then you have to have a good agent. So there's a lot of like who you know in that as well. So it actually isn't necessarily the best thing for the sports development. And again, if you think about where we, like, you need to be telling these stories long term, you need to be able to follow these people, you need to be able to watch it all. And the Diamond League is on TV, but like these other events aren't necessarily on TV. And if you are asking people, if you want to acquire fans, you can't ask them to buy a subscription to something they're not a fan of already. Like, I'm a track and field fan, and I won't buy subscriptions to these weird streaming services. So there's no hope of anybody else doing it. So it brings up the next point of Michael Johnson and his rival league, or not necessarily rival, but it's you know, the way I explained it to you before is it's not an or, it's not like Live Golf or something like this. It's not an or, it's an and. And that's to say that he's got a second league that he's starting, and it's really interesting. He's creating it with the Winners Alliance, which I didn't know much about, but you know, Michael Johnson's got a huge profile. He's been a commentator. Now he's working with Winners Alliance, which is like a for-profit arm of the Professional Tennis Players Association. And they're a licensing and sponsorship firm. They work with thousands of athletes. And they've obviously just worked with, I was reading this research, it's fascinating. They've just worked with, they signed a deal with the Federation of International Cricket Association, Cricketers Association. So point is, these big money, big sponsorship, they've obviously got lots of power. They're working with a good brand in Michael Johnson in an Olympic year to leverage off of this and create another league so that there's more opportunity for people and you can follow them and they're going
to... They seem to be going about it a different way to what we saw in golf, as you mentioned. So the LIV Tour is sort of in competition to the PGA Tour, and like golfers had to choose either or for the most part of the season. This seems to be, as you explained it to me, an addition to what World Athletics already has on the calendar.
The financial aspects of golf are very different. In track and field, that finances, as we said, aren't going to be the same. So the highest paid track and field athlete probably earns less than the lowest paid golfer, professional golfer. Depends on how you rate that. So don't hold me to that, but it's a good explanation of sort of levels here. So the incentive in track and field is to Olympic medals and World Championships medals. So if you go in as a competitor to the IAAF or to the World Athletics, it's going to be a problem. Similarly, you're not limited. As long as you are not conflicting time-wise with the Diamond League, they could run all of these. Now, they're not necessarily going to, right? Like, especially middle distance people or long distance, they're not going to run all of them, but a sprinter could. A sprinter could foreseeably run week to week to week to week without a problem. But again, we just talked about, if you've only got eight lanes and no heats, you have eight sprinters. Now, there are certainly more than that, as we see every year at the Olympic Games, where they have four or five sets of heats. So you can certainly find these people. And part of the challenge in track and field is there's no personalities, or there are minimal personalities. Usain Bolt comes to mind, Noah Lyles at the moment, Sha'Carri Richardson, obviously very big personalities, and they're great, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, Josh Kerr. But finding the next crop of those people, giving more people names, is really, really important, particularly for the growth of the sport. So this makes a ton of sense to me to have another series, have it, you know, leveraged working with World Athletics, you know, against, not necessarily against Diamond Leagues, but as a, it'll end up being a second tier because the Diamond Leagues do have some serious money. Like, if you win the Diamond League final, it's a lot of money. So I certainly don't think it's going to replace that, but I think it'll be in addition to perhaps a bit of a second tier, you know, tell some good stories and really help us buy in.
I think their strategy also is to bring the sport closer to America, which would be a huge market where I think, I from what I've read and what I can tell, is that the American market is also only interested in track and field around the Olympic Games time, and they're trying to make it more of an annual thing. And obviously America would be a huge market for that sport.
Yeah, I think there is a large appetite for track and field in the US, but a lot of it's around the collegiate system. So if you could leverage that and try and convert that across into some more serious stuff, then I think that'll go really well. And, you know, the interesting part here is that why are the Olympic Games and colleges, why do they succeed? Because they are teams, right? People want to support individuals, of course, but, you know, any one track and field event doesn't make, like, it's 5, 10, 15, you know, the longest track and field event is, you know, maybe an hour or two with some of the jumps or throws, or it'll be the jumps, like something like pole vault or high jump, right? Because there's interspersed stuff. But if that's the case, if you follow that sport, that's fine. But like, why would you support the high jump if you don't know anybody there? Well, because they are from your team. Okay, now we have teams in the Olympic Games, right? That you can support countries. And in track and field, collegiate sport, we have our college. And you have baked in, the collegiate system is very well resourced, and it's very well, like, there's a lot of history there. So people really buy in, right? IMAR, whatever. So I think one of the answers in track and field is teams. Now, this is really difficult. There is the NN running team, which is fundamentally it's a management group that sort of sponsors a team, or they're actually a Dutch insurance agency that then sponsors a management group, but they don't have a rival. And like, to say we're a team, and like, who do you play against? Well, nobody. Like,
yeah,
who gets?
Yeah.
They are seeing some success. They have released merchandise, people are buying it, and it's going well. And you look, it's on the back of Kipchoge and these sort of people. But we need a rival, probably from Adidas, so that we can or one of the other shoe brands, or one of the big brands, so that we can then see a rivalry. And then you pick a team. And picking teams is huge. You support against the other person, you want to see them win, you have buy-in. Particularly in longer distance events where people don't run as frequently, it's hard, especially with some of the East African runners, because you don't know who they are. So if they're not part of a team, you don't know who to support. So,
If the World Championships are on and the Olympic Games are on, the moment I see a South African flag, I see a South African jersey, I'm all in. I'd never heard of this person 5 minutes ago, but I am all in and I'm invested.
I mean, I've never heard of the sport and I'm invested. Like, yeah, I'll watch the shooting, I'll watch the, you know, like all this stuff that you never even heard of. So that speaks to this. And I think that's what track and field's trying to do. And I think we're going the right direction with that stuff. Let's see if there's enough eyeballs or they can really grow it enough, because it does take some time, but there is some money here, right? And with money, you can produce content and you can ride the wave of maybe not so much popularity.
Interesting stuff, man. Thanks for that. Yo, when you mentioned to me, I was intrigued. Let's see how this unfolds. I'd imagine that they're going to have a very strong content strategy. These companies who license events, who work with professional athletes, who put deals together, a lot of them have moved into the century and understand that without eyeballs, it doesn't exist. And where eyeballs is today is Netflix, it's Instagram, it's where your phone is. And if you're not creating behind the scenes content for that, the chances of succeeding is minimal. You can't just, live TV is massive and it helps a lot, but younger audiences are showing that they will not watch an event for 4 or 5 hours, but they will binge on the behind the scenes content, and then they'll go watch the highlights of that event because they're interested in knowing what the characters, these big personalities, has done.
Yeah, and they'll be on TikTok and YouTube, so you have to meet them there, especially the younger audiences. You know, Gen Z, their primary search engines are YouTube and TikTok, and they'll often be, and like, this isn't a Gen Z thing, I'll challenge listeners, how many times are you watching something on TV while you're on your phone as well? So if you're not in both places, people don't care. What I'd love to be doing is watching TV and seeing that, and then seeing behind the scenes on TikTok as soon as possible. So yes, I've just watched that race. Now let's watch the interviews on TikTok, or the secondary interviews on TikTok, or that sort of stuff. Because I'm interested in that person and that race. Like, let's do that. So you really, I mean, that's a heavy lift from a content point of view. You work in content. I've previously done a little bit. Like, that's a heavy lift. But if you can get that right, you absolutely smash it.
Yeah. But excellent.
Yeah, that's it for this intro episode. We will throw some things in the show notes, everybody. So one of the things we'll put in the show notes is our social media handles. And if there is something you want us to discuss, or other thoughts or feedback you want to give us, please send us a DM on Instagram. We will put our social media handles there. And otherwise, please do like, share the podcast, of course. Share it with a friend who you think would enjoy it to help us grow. Rate it, of course. And of course, please subscribe as always.
Marjan Schnauzers, in true fashion, are making an appearance on the very first episode. Oliver and Bentley are barking in the background. You might hear them. You'll become familiar with them on this spot if you like dogs. Like and subscribe and share. We need your support and we'd love to grow. And we will be covering endurance sports. David and I met at a continuous glucose tech startup company where we discussed a lot of glucose and nutrition, etc., and how the impact that has on your performance for you as an athlete. That is something we're going to do a deep dive on as well, continue to do a deep dive on this episode and look at endurance sports and how you can fuel yourself, how you can train, how you can coach yourself, and how you compare to the best high performance athletes in the world, and bring you very interesting content around that. So thank you so much for downloading, thank you for streaming, thank you for listening, and we will catch you on the next one.